Welcome back to Liberty Leaf's Literary Corner. I'm excited for today's deep dive. We're continuing our journey through Martin A. Lee's Smoke Signals,
exploring the history and cultural impact of cannabis in America chapter by chapter.
And unearthing those fascinating hidden gems along the way, right?
Absolutely. And today, we're stepping into the heart of the 1960s with the chapter Flower Power.
Oh, Flower Power. It's such an iconic image. But this chapter goes beyond the surface, doesn't it?
It really does. Lee analyzes how cannabis intertwined with the music, the art, the whole rebellious spirit of the 60s.
He argues that rock and roll, it became more than just music. It was like the pulse of a generation, challenging norms, pushing boundaries.
Exactly. Like jazz musicians embracing cannabis earlier in the century, right? Each generation finding its own connection with the plant.
Expressing their own unique cultural moment. Lee uses the Beatles as a prime example, right?
The Beatles, yeah. A band that received an MBE from the Queen, 1965.
Honored by the establishment.
And just a few years later, their music is being banned by the BBC, allegedly promoting drug use.
Wow. Talk about a cultural clash. And it wasn't just that they, the Beatles, were using cannabis. They were open about it, weaving it into their music.
McCartney himself said, "Gotta Get You Into My Life" was inspired by marijuana.
Really?
Yeah. And it wasn't just recreational. He talked about how it sparked their creativity, helped them think of themselves as artists.
Not just performers. It's like a window into their creative process. How cannabis influenced the music that defined a generation.
Exactly.
It makes you wonder how different would things be if they hadn't embraced it so openly.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't just the Beatles, though, was it?
No, not at all. Lee talks about this whole scene of bands in London. Part of this countercultural ways.
Like who?
Groups like the Animals, the Moody Blues, Pink Floyd, they were all part of it. And many of them revolved around this place called the Indica Bookshop.
Indica Bookshop. I was just going to ask about that. What made it so special? It wasn't your typical bookstore, right?
No, definitely not. It was co-founded by Peter Asher, you know, Jane Asher's brother.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And John Dunbar. And they created this hub for counterculture. Art. Literature.
And some pretty influential people passed through those doors.
Some incredibly influential people, yeah. It's mind-blowing when you think about it.
John Lennon met Yoko Ono there, didn't he? At an exhibition at Indica.
Yeah, he did. That's where they met. And the Beatles connection goes even deeper.
Mm.
Paul McCartney was really involved with Indica.
In what way?
He helped with the renovations, and he was their very first customer.
Oh, wow.
And then there was the International Times, that underground newspaper.
The one pushing for marijuana legalization.
That's the one. It operated right out of Indica's basement. With McCartney's support.
So Indica was really right at the heart of this movement. But Lee doesn't just focus on the positive aspects of this era, does he?
No, you're right. He also explores the challenges, the pushback against this growing cannabis movement.
Like those public smoke-ins he describes. I bet most listeners today wouldn't even know what those were.
Probably not. Basically, people would gather in public and openly smoke marijuana. As a form of protest.
A deliberate provocation.
Exactly. To force the authorities to confront this growing acceptance of cannabis. Lee highlights Dana Beale's actions in Tompkins Square Park.
What did he do?
Threw handfuls of joints into a crowd. It was a bold move. And in many cases, the police actually backed down, showing that that public sentiment was shifting.
It's like they were using civil disobedience to challenge the status quo. But I'm guessing not all the pushback was so peaceful.
You're right. Lee details incidents like the raid on Indica, authorities trying to shut down dissent by targeting the International Times.
A reminder that even with increasing acceptance, there were still powerful forces resisting that change.
Absolutely.
And those courses often used legal loopholes to their advantage, didn't they?
They did. Lee gives the example of photographer John Hoppy Hopkins.
What happened to him?
He got a 9-month prison sentence. For possessing a small amount of cannabis. It's a stark reminder of the injustices that were often carried out in the name of drug enforcement.
It makes you wonder if even prominent figures like the Beatles couldn't escape the complexities of marijuana law, what chance did ordinary people have?
That's a really good question. It highlights how these cultural and legal battles had very real consequences for individuals. It wasn't just a philosophical debate. It was about people's lives and freedoms. But these developments weren't limited to Britain, were they? Lee also talks about similar trends happening in the U.S.
Right. The U.S. had its own version of this British invasion, right?
Hmm.
With bands like the Grateful Dead and Jefferson Airplane. They were bringing cannabis culture to the forefront.
Exactly. And just like in Britain, those cultural shifts started spilling over into the legal and political arenas. Lee talks about how the arrest of musicians like Donovan and members of the Rolling Stones in Britain put the spotlight on cannabis laws, and it sparked these calls for reform.
And that's where the Wooten Report comes in, right? That landmark report commissioned by the British Parliament. It seems like it was a real turning point.
It was. It really challenged the whole reefer madness narrative. It presented a more scientific, less biased view of marijuana. It did. It found, you know, no evidence that marijuana led to violence or insanity.
Which is what reefer madness wanted everyone to believe, right?
Yeah. And actually, the report concluded that cannabis was less harmful than alcohol. Didn't lead to harder drugs.
Really? Less harmful than alcohol?
Well, that's what they found. Mm. And what's interesting is they said any problems associated with cannabis use were more likely due to the personality of the user, not the drug itself.
So it's not the cannabis, it's the person. That's a pretty big shift in thinking, isn't it?
It is. It really challenged this idea that cannabis was inherently dangerous. It suggested that how it was used and by whom mattered more.
Right, right. So the report was basically acknowledging the importance of personal responsibility and individual differences. But it went even further, didn't it?
Mm. It did. It actually criticized the existing cannabis laws, calling them overly punitive.
Infringing on civil liberties.
Yes. And they recommended decriminalization, arguing that criminalizing cannabis use did more harm than good.
Wow. That's a pretty bold statement for a government-commissioned report, right?
Mm.
What was the public reaction to such a radical proposal?
It was mixed, to say the least. You know, conservatives denounced it, clinging to their fears and stereotypes. But for many people, especially those involved in the counterculture movement, it felt like vindication.
Yeah, I can imagine. It legitimized their experiences and their calls for reform.
Exactly.
It must have been a very divisive issue back then, with people's deep-seated beliefs and values clashing. Tradition versus change, authority versus individual freedom.
You hit the nail on the head. It was a reflection of those larger cultural battles. And cannabis became a symbol of those struggles, like a flashpoint.
Right. So maybe the Wooten Report didn't lead to immediate legal changes.
Yeah.
But it definitely shifted the conversation.
It did. It helped break down the stigma surrounding cannabis, opened up space for a more rational, evidence-based approach to drug policy.
We've talked about this cultural revolution happening, fueled by music, art, and this rejection of traditional values. And now we see this legal battle unfolding, with reports like the Wooten Report challenging the status quo. How does Lee tie all of this together in the chapter?
Well, he argues that these developments were very closely linked. You know, the music and counterculture created a space for people to openly talk about cannabis.
Which then put pressure on the government.
Yeah. To rethink their policies.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a bottom-up movement for change, driven by people, not imposed from above.
Right. It's this idea that cultural change can actually drive political and legal reform.
Yeah.
And that's something we still see today.
Right.
Think about the changing attitudes towards LGBTQ+ rights.
Exactly. It's fascinating to see how these parallels play out across different social movements. It shows how powerful these cultural shifts can be.
Definitely. But going back to smoke signals, Lee doesn't just focus on Britain, right? He also explores how these cultural and legal battles played out in the U.S.
Oh, absolutely. The U.S. was having its own experience with bands like, you know, the Grateful Dead, Jefferson Airplane.
Bringing cannabis culture to the forefront.
Right. And they had their own protests, arrests, this growing movement for legalization, mirroring what was happening in Britain in many ways.
And speaking of cultural influence, we can't forget the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Lee calls it a drug album.
Yeah. And the imagery definitely supports that.
Even the BBC banning songs like Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds for supposedly promoting drug use just added to the mystique. It's kind of ironic when you think about it.
It is, especially considering the Beatles had been honored by the Queen just a few years before. It shows the changing times, right? This clash between a generation embracing new ideas and an establishment struggling to keep up.
Exactly. And if the Beatles, with all their fame, couldn't escape the complexities of marijuana law, what hope did ordinary people have?
It's a good question. A question that really highlights the very real challenges that regular people faced as these attitudes and laws shifted around them. This chapter has given us so much to think about. The power of music, the spirit of rebellion, the fight for social justice, and the evolving role of cannabis in our society. It's all there in this chapter.
It's like a snapshot of this really transformative period. And it makes you wonder, what is the lasting impact of this era? How did the 60s shape our perception of cannabis today?
Well, Lee argues that this period was absolutely pivotal in the history of cannabis in America. It's when cannabis became truly linked with social change, with personal liberation, with artistic expression.
And even though the counterculture movement eventually faded, those ideas, they didn't disappear, did they?
No, they continued to resonate, and they really laid the groundwork for the cannabis legalization movement that we're seeing today. It's amazing to think about how events from over half a century ago are still shaping the world we live in.
It really is. And it's what makes Smoke Signals such a fascinating read. It shows us how the past connects to the present, and how those historical currents are still influencing our culture and politics. This deep dive into flower power has definitely given us a lot to think about. The power of music, the spirit of rebellion, the fight for social justice, and the evolving role of cannabis in society.
It's been quite a journey, and this is only the beginning. Smoke Signals takes us through the whole history of Cannabis America.
And we'll be right here with you, exploring it all chapter by chapter.
We encourage you to pick up a copy of Smoke Signals and join us.
Welcome back to Liberty Leaf's Literary Corner. We've been deep diving into Flower Power, this chapter from Martin A. Lee's Smoke Signals, and really captures so vividly how cannabis was just entwined with the music and the art and the rebellion of the 1960s.
It's really remarkable how Lee uses these, you know, specific events and locations to show these larger cultural shifts, right? Like the Indica Bookshop, it's more than just a bookstore. It's like a microcosm of the entire counterculture movement.
All those connections stemming from one place. The Beatles browsing for books. John Lennon meeting Yoko Ono.
And the International Times operating right out of the basement, pushing for legalization.
It just shows how everything was interconnected back then.
It really does.
And then you've got these public smoke-ins, Lee describes. They were more than just protests, weren't they? It was like almost performance art.
Yeah, I think so too. It was like visually representing this clash, you know, this generation embracing cannabis, the establishment trying to suppress it.
It's fascinating. The civil disobedience, it almost becomes like a form of creative expression. But Lee also highlights how all these cultural shifts started influencing like the legal and political landscape. What stands out to you as the most significant development?
I would say the Wooten Report in Britain. It was like finally the establishment admitting that their whole reefer madness approach to cannabis was outdated.
Yeah. And it's so interesting how that report and the rise of the counterculture, the influence of music, they all kind of contributed to these changing perceptions, didn't they?
It's like all these things happening at the same time created this perfect storm for change. And, you know, we can't forget the backdrop of the Vietnam War, the civil rights protests. It was just this period of social upheaval.
Cannabis became a symbol of rebellion, a way to challenge the status quo.
Yeah.
Lee doesn't shy away from, like, the challenges that the movement faced. He makes it clear it wasn't all peace and love. He talks about the police raids, the arrests, those attempts to silence dissenting voices.
Right. It's a reminder that progress is rarely linear, you know?
There are always those setbacks along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, this chapter is about a generation finding its voice, challenging norms, pushing for change. What does Lee say about the lasting impact of this period?
He argues that the 1960s were pivotal for the history of cannabis in America. It's when the plant became truly linked with, you know, social change, personal liberation, artistic expression.
And even though the counterculture movement, it did fade, those ideas, they didn't go away.
They didn't. They kept resonating, and they really laid the groundwork for the cannabis legalization movement that we're seeing today.
It's incredible how those events from over half a century ago are still shaping our world. And that's what makes Smoke Signals such a captivating read. It connects the past to the present. It shows how those historical currents are still flowing through our culture, you know, even our politics.
Yeah.
This deep dive into flower power, it's really given us a lot to consider. The power of music, that spirit of rebellion, the fight for social justice, and of course, you know, the evolving role of cannabis in society.
It's all there in this chapter.
And if you're enjoying this journey with us, we encourage you to grab a copy of Smoke Signals and keep exploring. There's so much more to discover, and we'll be here to guide you every step of the way. And for more insights and resources on cannabis, don't forget to visit us at libertyleaf.shop. Until next time, happy reading.